from deep inside your radio.
All right, here is the way to start off the new year, ladies and gentlemen. Those of you who are planning to abuse or torture your detainees, there's interesting information afoot today. First of all, from a New York Times roundup of the fresh details that have emerged in the last few weeks from FBI memos and other sources over how the United States has been treating its detainees in Guantanamo Bay. Military officials who participated in the practices were saying the prisoners were tormented by being chained to a low chair for hours with bright flashing lights in their eyes, and audio tapes played loudly next to their ears. This was back in October, we learned this, including rap songs by Lil' Kim, Rage Against the Machine, and Eminem. But now, ladies and gentlemen, now, new, fresh information, new development. In a recent interview, another former official added new details, saying that many interrogators used a different audio tape on prisoners. A mix of babies crying and the television commercial for Meow Mix, in which the jingle consists of repetitions of the word meow. Ladies and gentlemen, start your tape recorders running. Just, you know, if you want to torture anybody, just that Meow Mix commercial will be coming your way soon. It's a new year, and we start by bidding farewell to Artie Shaw. Hello, welcome to the show. Thank you. From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to Le Show. Artie Shaw, by the way, had his first hit record with Cole Porter's Begin the Begin, which at the time was a very obscure song, and was later quoted as saying something like, if anybody walks up to me and says, I love that Begin the Begin you did, I want to hit him in the face. That's the kind of celebrity we need more of, ladies and gentlemen. One who really hates the fame. Australia, you know, we had this week here in the United States a little debate about the alacrity and the quantity and quality of the response by the United States government to the tsunami disaster in Asia. A little math was offered up by one source. Australia offered $27 million in United States aid for victims of the tsunami. Australia's population is 20 million. Its domestic gross domestic product is about $500 billion. That's $1.35 per person. When midweek, the United States contribution was $35 million. That was 9 cents per person. Now, we've tintupled it. Would that be the right word? To $350 million, so that would be 90 cents per person. Still less in relative terms than Australia's $1.35. Now, faced with this kind of information, Colin Powell on the Sunday Yak shows said, well, we reject that analysis. We reject the gross domestic product analysis of giving because we have so many private givers in the United States, so many people, so many independent people. You know, it's not just the government, ladies and gentlemen. It's the people, which I guess assumes that nobody in Australia gives. There are no private givers in Australia, according to Colin Powell. So he feels free to reject that analysis. Now, if you want to give, of course, there are many good places to go. International Committee for the Red Cross, Doctors Without Borders, or the bookstore chain that thinks it's a charity, Borders Without Doctors. But don't necessarily think you can go to some of the best-known Christian websites and be able to give. Yes, the James Dobson's FocusOnTheFamily.org does have a link to tsunami relief. And the American Family Association, run by Donald Wildman, has now added, late in the week, a story about the tsunami, though no way to actually give. But it does take the time to salute Reverend Wildman for being named one of 10 who made a mark on marketing in the December issue of Advertising Age. The Family Research Council's website is still featuring stories about Christians being left out of Christmas. Hey, I think we ought to put the groundhog back in Groundhog Day while we're at it, and the arbor back in Arbor Day. Let's plant some more trees. The Christian Coalition's website thanks supporters for their time and effort in getting voter guides out. Concerned Women for America features the truth about Alfred Kinsey. And Coral Ridge Ministries in Florida features advertisements for the upcoming Reclaiming America for Christ conference. Falwell.com, Reverend Jerry Falwell, is recruiting for a new organization, the Moral Majority Coalition. I guess that's the Christian Coalition and the Moral Majority smushed together into one giant thing. And also giving you the opportunity to take a late July cruise with Reverend Falwell on the Queen Mary 2. That's got to be the hippest cruise ever. Cruise with Jerry Falwell, ladies and gentlemen. So they can't be... You know, it was Christmas, and the staff was probably on vacation when the tsunami hit. That's why the Christian websites haven't linked up. But anyway, you know where to go. Some news from outside the bubble. This from the Asian Times. That is way outside the bubble. And this is, I think pretty early on after 9/11, this broadcast started alerting you, if you cared, to the quixotic nature of the fact that we named as our first real target after Afghanistan, at least, a country. Our criteria were a country that has weapons of mass destruction, threatened its neighbors, and supports terrorism. And we chose Iraq. And I pointed out at the time that a country that, without argument, without need for any dubious quasi-intelligence, fulfilled all three of those qualifications. Put them right up at the top, why don't you? Was Pakistan. They are, of course, now our one of our major allies in the war against terrorism. They're the country that helped us find Anyway, Dateline Washington, Pakistan has laid down the agenda for the Bush administration for the next 4 years on what it expects in exchange for continued cooperation to hunt down al-Qaeda. A slew of demands ranging from continued economic aid to a generous flow of weapons. Jahangir Karamat, Pakistan's new ambassador to Washington, set out this list of demands, articulating Pakistan's hopes and desires for a partnership that will endure beyond the capture of Osama bin Laden. Yeah, even beyond that. What was noted by observers was the language he used, sounding more like a teacher telling a pupil the level of performance he expected from the Americans, according to diplomatic observers. The U.S. is currently giving $3 billion in economic and military aid to Pakistan, apart from having written off nearly $2 billion in debt. Karamat, former chief of army staff in Pakistan, we'll get to that in a moment, says the U.S. largesse must continue, that's his word, must. Among other musts for Washington to carry out are a free trade agreement or alternative arrangements, and investment initiatives in Pakistan to, quote, influence public opinion. We need to work with the U.S., he says, to change perceptions based on past happenings and create perceptions based on current policies and future projections. Yeah, your perceptions about Pakistan should be based on future projections, ladies and gentlemen, not on what's actually happened in the past. Pakistan, he says, will, of course, continue to address U.S. concerns. His categorical tone left some U.S. officials a little embarrassed. Quote, even Tony Blair's ambassador won't use that tone in public, said one observer. What surprised some was Karamat's dismissive tone about the AQ Khan affair. AQ Khan was Pakistan's father of its nuclear bomb, who was last year revealed to be the father of a worldwide nuclear proliferation system, dispensing nuclear goodies to, among other good guys, Libya, North Korea, and Iran. He labeled it, Karamat did, a proliferation episode, while continuing to deny any government complicity. There was no government sanction approval or any kind of government connection with what went on, he said flatly. But Dr. A.Q. Khan, father of the A.Q. Khan affair, in an 11-page confession, named Karamat, as well as General Musharraf, the president of Pakistan, as the men on top who were aware of what was going on when he proliferated. As the chief of army staff from 1996 to 98, Karamat was directly responsible for the security of his country's nuclear program. Karamat declined to elaborate on how something so big could happen on his watch, saying that too much has already been written about the AQ Khan affair. So we've been given our marching orders, ladies and gentlemen, by our ally, our fine ally, Pakistan. Also from outside the bubble, from a Canadian publication, the Globe Gazette, on November 22nd, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture Economic Research Service, an estimate released that day, 2005 is the first year in nearly 50 that the United States will not have an agricultural trade surplus. That's right, we're importing more food than we're exporting. What? The breadbasket of the world? There's a hole in your breadbasket. Agriculture Secretary Ann Veneman has no explanation of how a $13.6 billion trade surplus in 2001 has become a trade deficit. So we're among the countries that are supplying more food. Well, before that, beef imports are forecast at $3.8 billion. Beef is among the fastest growing imports. We're not growing enough beef. Folks, get some cattle in your yard, will you? Help us out. Imported fresh or chilled beef, largely from Canada, increased 54% last year. Frozen beef imports from Australia and New Zealand jumped 46%. This was happening while we had a closing of the Canadian border to live cattle imports because of the banned cow scare. So, presumably, we'll be importing more beef from Canada when the border is reopened, which is supposed to happen. Brazil exported more soy and soy products in the first 10 months of 2004 than the U.S. in the entire year. And China is, well, who cares about China? It's China. It's not Chinatown. It's China, Jake. So, as I say, there's a hole in our breadbasket. Now, ladies and gentlemen, going back to the issue of torture, for those of you really who want to pursue a life in torture, not only the advice to record the Meow Mix commercial. And by the way, that report does clarify what those of us who fly frequently believe, that being accompanied by crying babies for 5 hours is internationally defined as torture. Anyway, speaking of which, this week the Justice Department issued a revised definition of torture. You missed this, didn't you? This overtly repudiates one of the most criticized policy memorandums drafted during President Bush's first term, the one that his White House counsel, Mr. Gonzalez, soon to be our Attorney General, supervised the drafting of. Now the Office of Legal Counsel of the Justice Department declares that, quote, torture is abhorrent both to American law and values and international norms. I didn't know norms went international. Do they still have the 99-cent pancakes? It goes on to reject a previous statement that only organ failure, impairment of bodily function, or even death constitute torture punishable by law. That was in the 1992 memo. The only three definitions that it allowed of torture were organ failure, impairment of bodily function, or death. That figured prominently in complaints by human rights groups about Alberto Gonzalez, who oversaw the memo's creation. The new memo says torture may consist of acts that fall short of provoking excruciating and agonizing pain, and thus may include mere physical suffering or lasting mental anguish. Hey, so I was tortured at Saturday? No, I wasn't. His opinion is meant to undermine any notion that those who conduct harmful interrogations may be exempt from prosecution. One of the most controversial provisions of the earlier memorandum, which, by the way, was signed by J.S. Bybee, who was, let's see what he was acting Assistant Attorney General when he signed it. For his efforts, he's been rewarded with a seat on a U.S. Court of Appeals. Anyway, one of the most controversial provisions was an assertion that the president's executive powers were sufficient to permit tolerance of torture in extraordinary circumstances. The International Committee of the Red Cross had declared in response that the prohibition of torture, which is in a global treaty we signed, has no exceptions. And Advocates of strict adherence to that treaty lost interagency battles to hardliners in the Defense Department, the Justice Department, and the White House, which led to the earlier memo. They maintain the president has expansive powers during the war on terrorism, don't you know? The new memo pointedly sidesteps this issue, stating that the consideration of the bounds of any such authority would be inconsistent with the president's unequivocal directive that United States personnel not engage in torture. It also drops an attempt in the earlier memo to rule that harmful acts not specifically intended to cause severe pain and suffering might be legal, and to define specific intent. Now it leaves specific intent undefined. See, before, it said you had to intend to commit severe pain, to cause severe pain. If you just happened in the course of chaining and extreme temperature and stuff to cause extreme pain, that was just a happy accident. The memo also now explicitly states that a defendant's motive to protect national security, for example, is not relevant to the question of his or her intent under the law. So, in the Clinton administration, we argued about what the meaning of the word is. In the Bush administration, apparently, we're doomed to argue about what the different definition of torture is. It's more substantive. There's more meat on the bones, don't you think? Meanwhile, we learn administration officials are preparing long-range plans for indefinitely imprisoning suspected terrorists who they don't want to turn over to courts in the United States or other countries. This according to the Sunday Washington Post. The Pentagon and the CIA have asked the White House to decide on a more permanent approach for potentially lifetime detentions. I said lifetime detentions. Hundreds of people now in military and CIA custody. The government doesn't have enough evidence on them to charge in courts. We've been operating in the moment, says a senior administration official, because that's what's been required. Now we can take a breath. We have the ability and the need to look at long-term solutions. One proposal under review is transferring large numbers of detainees from Guantanamo Bay to new U.S.-built prisons in Afghanistan, Saudi Arabia, and Yemen. The prisons would be operated by those countries, but the State Department would ask them to abide by human rights standards. I would ask. The Defense Department is asking Congress for $25 million to build a 200-bed prison to hold detainees who are unlikely ever to go through a military tribunal because of lack of evidence. Hey, that's only $10 million less than we were going to give to the tsunami until we ten-tupled it. The new prison, dubbed Camp 6, would allow inmates more comfort and freedom than they have now for the lifetime, and would be designed for prisoners the government believes have no intelligence to share. It would allow socializing among inmates. What do you know? Nothing. What do you know? Nothing. That kind of socializing. The CIA is believed to be holding fewer than 36 al-Qaeda leaders in prison. The CIA has been engaging in renditions of certain prisoners to other countries where interrogation techniques may include torture. Renditions originated in the 1990s as a way of picking up criminals abroad, such as drug kingpins, and delivering them to courts in the United States or other countries. Since 2001, the practice has been used to make certain detainees do not go to court or go back on the streets, says one CIA officer who's been involved in the practice. The whole idea has become a corruption of renditions. It's not rendering to justice. It's kidnapping. Makes you proud, doesn't it? Now, ladies and gentlemen, I think it's time for a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Oh, it sure is. You never know till the music starts. Tales of Airport Security. In Imagine a lifetime of hearing the Meow Mix commercial. No, that's not a tale of airport security. Dear Harry, Kurt writes, I was flying home from visiting my parents in Chicago on Monday the 27th, very busy at the security checkpoint. One of the workers preparing people for going through the magnetometer was telling everyone, you are required to remove your shoes and pass them through the X-ray machine. He repeated it every 30 seconds or so and was telling people individually to remove their shoes. I wasn't aware that the TSA regulations had been changed to require shoes to be removed, but there was a crowd, and I didn't want to argue the point, so I removed them and went through. On the other side, I retrieved my shoes, and as I was putting them on, I saw a TSA supervisor. So I asked her, excuse me, could you tell me when the TSA mandated that passengers had to remove their shoes and pass them through the X-ray machine? She seemed a little taken aback, and then said, the TSA doesn't require that. So I replied, you should listen to what your employee is saying over there and notice that everyone is removing their shoes. She listened, then she went over and had a talk with him. Just a little snapshot of TSA training in action. Learn while you earn. A tale of airport security, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. This is Le Show.
I'm looking out my window, feeling kind of blue. I ain't heard from my baby, did she find somebody new? So I called up her number, and her number had changed. So I climbed up to the mountain, and I screamed out her name. I said, hey, 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 my, my, loo-la-loo. Lulalu, don't leave me, I will do anything for you. Lulalu, you make me feel so fine. Lulalu, I need you, don't take your love away. Lulalu, oh woman, don't make me cry, don't make me cry. I stood out on the corner, I walked up and down the street, looking for my Lula with that smile so nice and sweet. I'm not gonna hide it, my love just keeps on growing, 'cause she looks so good to me, whether she's coming or she's going. I said, hey, 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 my, my, Lula, Lula. Lulalu, don't leave me, I will do anything for you. Lulalu, you make me feel so fine. Lulalu, I need you, don't take your love away. Lulalu, oh woman, don't make me cry, don't make me cry. Well, maybe she just needs some time alone, or maybe my little Lula's heart
has suddenly turned to stone. I can't give up on Lula. I've got to take a stand. So I wrote this little letter and I give it to the postman. It said, baby, please call me. Please drop me a line. Come on, throw an old dog a bone. I need to know if you're still mine. I said, hey, 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 hey. My, my, Lula, Lula. Lula, Lula, don't leave me. I will do anything for you. Lula, Lula, you make me feel so fine. Lula, Lula, I need you. Don't take your love away. Lula, Lula, oh woman, don't make me cry. Don't make me cry. My, my, Lula, 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 my, my, Lula, Lula.
Ladies and gentlemen, here is a quote from one of the Sunday Morning Yak shows that, well, it brings to mind a couple of questions. One, is this guy kidding? And two, didn't the guy who was sitting there across from him asking questions hear what this guy was saying? This guy is Senator Joe Lieberman.
I believe this month, January 2005, is going to be a month of historic transformation in the Middle East, when the Iraqis and the Palestinians will hold genuine elections and begin becoming democratic nations. That's exactly what we want. It's in some ways the best non-military victory we could achieve in our own war against terrorism, and it's happening.
The best non-military result we could achieve in the war on terrorism is the Iraqi elections, ladies and gentlemen. So the $200 billion and the 1,300 plus troops killed aren't military. Is that what can we just hear that one more time?
I believe this month, January 2005, is going to be a month of historic transformation in the Middle East, when the Iraqis and the Palestinians will hold genuine elections and begin becoming democratic nations. That's exactly what we want. It's in some ways the best non-military victory we could achieve in our own war against terrorism, and it's happening.
I see. He says, in some ways. Non-military. In some ways, meaning it's military. Senator Joe Lieberman, of course he was being examined for a couple of high-ranking positions in the Bush administration. Why wouldn't he be? With rhetorical skills like that, calling the advent of elections in Iraq a non-military victory in our war on terror. Man, that's good. That's almost meow mix quality. Listening to Joe Lieberman, I think, is included in the Justice Department's new definition of torture, if it goes on for, if I played that one more time. Ladies and gentlemen, this is so outside the bubble, and yet it's so darn good. Oh, by the way, before I get to that, it just occurs to me to point out there have been remarkable, almost hard to believe similarities in the approaches of the American, the Australian, and the British governments during the whole Iraq War thing. I've pointed out on this broadcast before that in each country there was at least one whistleblower inside the intelligence service in the run-up to the war who said, this is jive, publicly. And in each case was ignored. And in each case, the government had a review later on that pointed the finger at, oh, we had badly sourced intelligence in three countries simultaneously on the same subject. Hard to believe. Then John Howard and George Bush won re-election, and Tony Blair is going to. And now the most amazing similarity of all. You know that President Bush has been criticized this week for, as I noted at the beginning of the broadcast, a lack of, according to critics, a lack of alacrity in responding to the tsunami disaster, staying at his ranch for 3 days before issuing a public statement of concern and regret and blah, blah, blah. Guess who else is being criticized for staying on vacation and not coming back to his capital to express regret and concern and blah, blah, blah? Tony Blair. Isn't that wild? I don't know what it means. Hey, listen, if I knew what anything means, I wouldn't be doing this show. From The Australian, an Australian newspaper bringing us news about another matter between the Americans and the Brits. While the British government remained officially friendly to U.S. President Richard Nixon during the Watergate scandal, behind the scenes, officials were urged to take, quote, any measure open, unquote, to keep Nixon away from London. That's according to newly released archives. At the same time, Britain's then ambassador to Washington warned that Nixon had to be handled with care because he was, quote, vengeful and irrational, unquote. Britain's prime minister then, Harold Wilson, fought hard to prevent Nixon from making a proposed visit to Britain in July 1974 in the heat of in the absolute peak of the Watergate crisis, a month before he resigned. During that visit, he would have been feted by Queen Elizabeth. Wilson believed the president's visit would prove a serious embarrassment, according to April 1974 documents from his official files. Wilson did not relish the idea of a visit by President Nixon for what were evidently domestic political purposes, his private secretary wrote. He thought the president's trip to Paris had been brought about by similar motives, and he wished to discourage a trip to London on the way back from Moscow in early July, if possible. The prime minister therefore told me, this is the prime minister's secretary, that he wanted the Foreign Office to take any measure open to us to ensure that Mr. Nixon did not come to London in the circumstances described. Advice was sought from Sir Peter Ramsbotham, Britain's ambassador to Washington, who said London's close ties with Washington meant it could not risk an open snub to Nixon. His disappointment and disillusionment if we refused to receive him would be all the greater, and he is a vengeful man, Ramsbotham wrote, adding, in a situation in which he feels hounded and even cornered, the president could be capable of the irrational. That from 30 years ago would seem like ancient history, were we not in possession of a recently recorded tape from Nixon in heaven.
So, not much on tap for the new year so far, sir.
Nope. Well, still, you have to take into consideration the death thing.
Mm-hmm. No doubt about it.
Yeah. Slows things down considerably.
Has for years now.
Yep.
I mean...
No, sure. I mean, nothing you can do about it.
No, it's the old off the earth, out of mind thing.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Well...
And then, of course, the way this place is run, this isn't really their New Year, if you get my drift.
No, absolutely.
I mean,
No, I mean, you don't want to...
I mean, we know they're taping.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
One reason why we're taping.
Well, I'm not, but...
But I am. Yeah, and that's why.
But there is this new information about... Britain, back then, wanting to keep you out.
But I told you about the socialists back then.
Well, we all knew.
No, but I mean, you know the commie line at the time. Mm-hmm. The socialists weren't really commies. They were just,
very liberal.
That's right.
Left to the Democrats.
That's right. Not even pink, just sort of...
Pink-ish.
But I told you.
Yeah.
These are the kind of people who don't celebrate the new year on January 1st, if you know what I mean.
That's right. Beyond the pale.
Yeah. Yep. And here you go. I mean, Harold Wilson, He is embarrassed by me being seen with the Queen. I mean, yeah. President Giscard over in Paris could take the hit.
Yeah, yeah.
And, well, we know the Queen is made of pretty strong stuff.
Oh, yeah. German background, after all.
That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, for her, World War II was, you know, really a family thing.
That's right. Yep.
So, where was Wilson getting this embarrassment kick from, you know?
Mm.
We know where.
Yeah, yeah, we do.
From his friends in Moscow.
Yeah, that's where it had to come from.
Yeah. I mean, you know, because why else?
No, no, of course. That was part of the Soviet line at the time, that being seen with you was poison.
Yeah, because, of course, of what we had done with China. Mm-hmm. That was a necessary bit of countering the strategic balance and all.
That's right, that's right.
And Wilson, you know, yeah, was just playing their flunky boy.
Just carrying her water.
That's right. Just,
and I mean, you know, to say that you were vengeful and irrational.
Well, of course, that's.
And you know, coming from their ambassador, I mean.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, we had him over for dinner several times.
You know, put him on guest list where it was absolutely discretionary.
That's right. And
this is the thanks he got.
Yeah. Well, of course. They knew how very helpful it was going to be for me to be seen with the Queen during that Watergate period, you see.
Yeah, that's right. They did.
I mean...
No, they weren't doing this for no reason.
Nope. The communists never did anything for no reason, see. That's how you could tell.
Well...
I mean, that's not how you could tell they were communists, you see.
No, I didn't...
Because other people never did anything for no reason, too.
That's right.
Of course.
I always had her.
But just imagine the impact on my base of political support. In the middle of all that Watergate nonsense, you see. Mm-hmm. In the middle of all that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Here I am. I'm not wallowing in Watergate.
No.
I'm at Buckingham Palace with the goddamn Queen of England.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's respectability that even a Kennedy would have to envy. I mean, you know, their dad kissed the old man's feet.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So, of course, they had to deny me that.
Yep. Yep, fits in with their plan.
And, you know, don't get me wrong. I mean, that was our right to do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Nothing you could do about that. That was, you know, their country and all.
And their queen.
That's right. And their queen.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Still, Wilson's up here now, isn't he?
Have to check. I'm pretty sure.
Could ask Hoover.
That's right. He'd know. But I think Wilson is here.
No, I mean, of course, you know, the one thing the commies could always do for their friends was keep them out of hell.
Yep.
I mean, yep. You realize that when you saw Helen Gahagan Douglas just waltzing around here.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, just smiling her pinko smile at me and giving me all that forgiveness crap.
Pretty sad.
That whole forgiveness bag, like the kids say.
Yep. Yep, that whole bag.
So, just wargaming this for a minute.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
This concept type of thing.
Yep.
So Harold Wilson is up here.
Pretty safe bet.
So, you see, now would be the time when he'd be least expecting a response from us.
You mean for the shunning?
I mean, we still have that plan we had for firebombing the Brookings Institution.
Oh, sure. We brought copies of all our papers.
I mean, the library didn't...
No. You had the right to...
So, I mean, we could...
But still, I mean, I well, you know, Wilson didn't have anything to do with Brookings, necessarily, aside from the fact that they shared a pinko slant,
no,
but...
No. But you say you take the bare bones of that plan, the operational stuff, the personnel,
mm-hmm,
see,
mm-hmm,
and you adapt it to current circumstances.
We did get some of the personnel in up here.
You bet we did. Now, you just change the targeting.
Change it to...
You see what I'm saying?
I'm not sure. I...
Your firebomb is damn cloud.
Not sure that...
No, I know it'd be wrong, but...
Don't think these clouds...
So I'm just thinking conceptually here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I don't think these clouds burn.
I mean, if he wants to see vengeful and irrational, you see, then that's what we show him.
Conceptually.
That's right. Because...
Because these clouds don't burn.
No, of course not.
Yeah.
Especially not the ones they give to the commies' friends.
Yeah, that's right. Especially those.
Yep.
So,
yep.
Take no action.
Hate to just seem like a pitiful, helpless angel, though.
But we don't have angel credentials just yet.
No, I know, but...
No, hate to let him get away with it.
Yep, I mean, just imagine what some of those rat-ass Republican senators would have done seeing me with the Queen.
No, I know, but...
See, we find out where Wilson likes to take his meals. See, that we can do.
Oh, sure. We have the people for that.
Right, yeah. Then we send one of the Cubans over to his table.
I'm not sure the Cubans are still taking our calls, but...
You send one of them over, you'll find one, and then you tell him when Wilson's not looking, see?
Mm-hmm.
Just spit in his tea. Just do it, you know?
I think we still have one of the Cubans in
our... Let him see what it feels like to feel hounded and cornered.
And spat into...
That's right. Yep. Yep. Okay. That's the plan.
Well, we still have
good way to start off the new year.
Mm. Well, that's for sure.
All right. You get back to me on this.
Oh, absolutely.
Don't want to let this slide now.
No, no question.
All right.
Starts at midnight, you pay your own wages. Make something of yourself in this great unknown. The heart you've got to give. Someone whose future ain't in stone.
This is Le Show, and now, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, no, sorry now. Oh, sorry now.
The apologies of the week. Deadline Denver, a Lafayette, Colorado man who claimed his Christmas lights could be controlled by internet visitors from all over the world admitted it was all a big hoax. Alex Komaritsky had claimed his 17,000 lights on his home were connected to his computer through the internet. The story was picked up by the Associated Press, which distributed the story worldwide. Quote, I apologize to those people who may be angry with me, but hopefully most will see the humor in the whole situation and realize that my attempt to bring joy and a smile to people's faces was successful, he said. God's only son Jesus came to earth and gave his life so that we may live. Those words came not from a pulpit, but from the desk of the director of the Colorado Division of Fire Safety. Laid out in a Christmas greeting, Paul Cook, the director of the division, sent on his state email account to 6 employees and 5 fire chiefs across the state. Spokesman for the State Department of Public Safety said the message was inappropriate and violated department policy against personal messages and emails. Cook apologized and said he wasn't trying to impose any religion on anyone. There are airline apologies all over the place. Quote, we apologize for the delay and inconvenience, says a spokesman, Thomas Becker, for Northwest Airlines, trying to recover from weather-related problems. There are also problems, as you know, with U.S. Air and Com Air. Get to those in a moment. First, here's Nat.
I'm glad that you're sorry. Glad that you're sorry. I'm glad that you're sorry now.
U.S. Airways said it was recovering from what its chief executive called an operational meltdown caused by bad weather, a high number of workers calling in sick, and a heavy holiday travel schedule. By the way, when I had waited an hour in Philadelphia for my bags on U.S. Airways, I asked what was going on. They said it was an operational issue. So they liked the adjective operational. The company acknowledged our extra efforts to accommodate stranded travelers are no substitute for our usually good record of delivering passengers and their bags to their destinations in a timely way. It apologized to their customers. Should apologize for lying about their usual practice, shouldn't they? Yes, they should. Ladies and gentlemen, yes, they should. And thanks for asking. Apologies of the week. Oh, beverage maker Snapple apologized for a joke about Staten Island on its website. And I sure hope you folks in Philadelphia had a nice Kwanzaa. That's going to conclude this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, over the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz, around the globe via the internet, live and archived at 2 different locations, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available as a free download at www.audible.com/LeShow and on Sirius Satellite Radio, channel 108. And it would be just like Joe Lieberman knowing a military victory from a non-military victory if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? Alrighty. Thank you very much. Email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks. Le Show playlists available at harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.